In the dev world, the front end dev world, nobody sleeps tonight. In the dev world, the front end dev world, a build has failed tonight. Oh, we mumble away. It's time. It's time for Tools Day.
This is actually horribly relevant to my life right now.
Oh, sorry, Chris. Welcome, everyone else, to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about GIFV. G-I-F-V. It's a real thing. And we have a special guest of the show to talk about it, Jason Orman.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
Welcome to the show. We're super, super, super excited to have you. So I was introduced to Jason through a mutual friend of ours, someone who works with Jason, Ian Carrico, who's a performance engineer at Vox, like Jason, who will tell us a lot about it soon. And he sent me this really interesting email about something that he was working on called GIFV. And I was like kind of doing some performance research at the time. And I was just like, this is really interesting. More people need to know about this. So we bring you this show so that you all now know about it. Things that are happening in the performance world, in image performance, GIF performance, video performance, all cool things. So, Jason, tell us what it's like at your job and what you do at Vox.
So, the mission is relatively simple. Make the websites faster. a couple years ago, we publicly declared performance bankruptcy.
What does that mean?
Performance bankruptcy, I mean, it just means that we had been, you know, spending too much, you know, we were way over budget on, you know, requests for our users, and our pages were just too slow, in particular for mobile devices. And our team took note of that, and we said, hey, we've really got to do something about this. And so I was the first team member, and then Ian came on shortly after, and we've been, you know, kicking butt and taking names ever since, just doing everything that we can to make the websites as fast as possible.
So I'm kind of curious. So when you say performance engineer at Vox, does that mean Vox's CMS platform, like Chorus? Coral?
Chorus.
Mm-hmm. Or is that specific sites? Like, I know Polygon SB Nation pretty well, but I'm not sure about the whole spectrum of Vox media
Racked,
sites.
Eater, Curved. I only know this because of mutual friends of Vox.
Yep, you've got it. So basically, there's Vox Media, which is, I guess, you know, it encompasses all of our brands and verticals. And then we have, you know, the individual brands would be like Verge, Vox, Racked, Curved, Eater, Polygon, and SB Nation, and Recode, which is one of our newest brands. And just a quick note, SB Nation actually has like 300 smaller websites. So a lot of web pages. And so I work on, there's no rules. If there is a web page or really anything, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a web page. Anything that we do that needs to be faster, I might, you know, get in there and try to help out, you know, probably starting off with some analysis, figuring out what's normal, what's fast, you know, for whatever it is that we're looking at. And then I'll work with whoever owns that application, and we'll, you know, work together on how to make it as quick as possible.
I think it's really cool that Vox has hired a specific team to work on performance engineering. I think that more companies need to do this. Like, the second that I heard Ian was applying for this job, I was like, that's a thing? That's like a whole new level of front-end development specialties.
Plus, like, media sites in general are usually so bad at performance. Like, you go on CNN.com or BBC.com. BBC is actually pretty good, but CNN or some of the other media sites, and they're just absolutely miserable. So it's really cool to hear like a media site and a media conglomerate, I guess, harping and focusing in on performance just in general.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Vox Media takes a lot of pride in what we do across all of our brands. And I think we just had some some technical debt, and as we had, you know, expanded our brands and our reach and everything, it was sort of time to say, okay, we've really got to fix these things. People are people need a better experience, and we're all about the experience. And so we decided to focus on that. And you know, I was I had worked at the Curb Network before, which was Curb Peter Racked. They were acquired by Fox Media, and then I came over. While I was at Curb, I was a full stack engineer. I came over to Vox Media. I decided to be a front-end engineer, and then now I'm a performance engineer, which is, it's technically front-end, but I don't know, I spend about 90% of my day in server-side code, and just whatever needs to be done is, right. is really what it is.
Yeah. Before we get into talking about Giphy, I'm really curious about what tools you use now to measure performance.
Sure. I would tend to start with a web page test. So I'll, you know, use webpagetest.org sometimes, but the majority of the time I'll use our private cluster just because we have it version locked, and I don't have to worry about any unexpected results, because even webpagetest over time gets updated, and sometimes it can have a significant like effect on benchmarking. So that's my go-to for testing web pages, and then at other times, if I'm curious about like a specific resource, like for instance an image, if I have an endpoint, and I need to, you know, test very specific assets, then I might just cook something up with some custom, you know, custom code and timers, and I also use a few little browser plugins and bookmarklets and things like that measure. You know, timings.
Do you know what of those are? Is that what you were going to ask, Chris?
Well, no, I was kind of curious. So I've seen some of these, like Paul Irish sometimes does these random drive-by performance reviews on websites, and he blows up these like flame charts of Chrome DevTools. I'm kind of curious, as a performance engineer, if you ever do things like that as well, or is that kind of too academic for you guys, or?
No, I guess, you know, it's funny because, I didn't think to say that, but that's definitely a tool that I use all the time.
Okay. And
so definitely the network tab is a very, you know, popular place to be. Look at what assets are downloading, you know, what their sizes are, timings, origins, protocols, you know, things of that nature. And then also the what is it? I forget what it's called now. I think they have it labeled as the profile. Yep. And so like a bunch of profiles and checking out the timelines, looking at the flame graphs for JavaScript execution can be really helpful, especially if you have something that's dragging the page down.
When you look at those flame graphs, what is like the most telling thing or the most common thing that you see that's a like performance bottleneck?
So I mean, you're just gonna look for a big spike. I mean, I guess it's kind of like a slagmite, right? Is that the one that hangs from the top down?
That's way better, slagmite.
Yeah.
Slactite? No, slactite.
Slactite.
Right? Hangs tight to the top.
Oh, a slagmite's from the bottom.
Oh, okay, so it's a slagmite?
Okay, I don't know. I'm actually going to look it up.
So we'll have to look that up. So anyways, you're just looking for spikes. You're just looking for anything anomalous that's standing out in comparison to anything else. And Chrome also highlights, you know, if you have a slow frame, it will highlight that with a little red dash, you know, right across the top. And then I'll just look in the flame graphs and see what looks horrific.
out of curiosity, do you ever debug performance in Firefox? I was recently asked to debug a Firefox specific performance issue. I was like, I've never debugged performance in Firefox. I was curious if you guys ever do.
Every once in a while. Luckily, thus far, we haven't had any big issues that have been Firefox specific. Okay. The majority of the time, whenever I'm benchmarking anything in Firefox, it's going to be network based.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's going to influence, the reason we do that is going to be because we have different types of, different media formats that we can serve to Firefox versus Chrome. So
So speaking of media formats, Giphy. So,
nice.
Boom, got a transition.
Nice.
The first time I'd ever heard of Giphy was, or Giphy, was when I saw Giphy or Jiffy.com, whatever you want to call it, and they said Giphy, and I was like, what is it, WebM? I don't know. So I guess what is GIFV?
Right. So GIFV is just a sort of fancy, you know, hip way of saying that it's a video that was converted over from a GIF. It's pretty simple. You just take a GIF and you convert it to a video. So, I mean, I'm sure you've noticed that that a GIF and a video file are very similar. You know, the net effect is very similar. But GIFs have terribly massive file size, and that's because they don't have any type of compression really at all. It's a lossless format, and so they end up being gigantic. And unfortunately for performance engineers around the world, GIF made a roaring comeback just a few years ago, which has made things very difficult. So that was one of the things where I felt like I could do a lot of good is to tackle that.
So I'm kind of curious. So where did this come into play for Vox? Was it just the comments, and you're like, okay, too many GIFs in the comments, or was it your content, or how did you deploy this across? What did you do first of all?
Why? How did you deploy? Why and what and how? These are all things we need to know.
Why, what, and how?
Tell us everything you know.
Happy to dive in. The reason I wanted to do it, it was very organic. Somebody told me, hey, there's a slow web page, and I'm like, okay, let me check it out. And I believe Ian had also checked it out. And we loaded up the page, and then immediately was like 90 megabytes of GIFs.
90?
Oh yeah.
My God.
GIFs will do that.
And so there was about, I want to say about 10 or 12 GIFs on the page, and probably about 4 or 5 of them could fit in your viewport on a good-sized monitor at a time. So you'd have 5 gigantic GIFs playing at one given time, and it was 90 megabytes, and... it's pretty brutal.
Were you serving those to mobile and desktop? Like every single user got that giant GIF?
So that's probably the worst part. we do serve images dependent on the browser's DPI. So, okay. You know, on a large low DPI device, they're going to get a big image, and then on a small high DPI device, they're still going to get a big image. You know, lots of pixels.
And DPI is
dots per inch.
Yep.
Right.
Dots per inch. And actually, I think it should be, I think PPI is supposed to be the
pixels
more accurate.
Pixels per inch.
Yep. Supposed to be the more accurate term. But what we're talking about there is like the Retina 2X, 3X, things of that nature. So yeah, we were shipping gigantic GIFs to users on mobile devices. I can just imagine myself trying to get onto the train and load up an article, you know, before I step in, hopefully before I get in the tunnel so I have something to look at, and then get hit with 90 megabytes of GIFs coming over some really shaky New York, you know, cell connection.
That's my life right now.
And I felt bad, so I knew I had to do something about that, and got right into thinking about how to implement this GIFV feature.
I think GIFV is one of the coolest things that has happened in image performance lately, because it's kind of like a lie that you're selling to your audience. I think it was Imgur that created the GIFV, and they were just like, we're going to... What?
Was it Imgur? I thought it was Giphy or Jiffy. I don't remember.
I believe it was Imgur that originally coined the term Giphy.
Yeah, because Giphy, G-I-F-P-H-Y, they actually serve GIFs still, because their whole thing is that go and find GIFs there.
Not Giphy. Giphy Cat. I don't remember. It's been a while. Never mind.
Imgur serves the GIFV format. And it's a lie that you're telling your audience. They invented this image format, and they said, okay, whenever you see this image format on a page when you're parsing it, if this browser can support WebM video, serve the WebM. If not, then you serve the GIF still. And that, to me, is like a really cool, sly way of improving performance in a very what's it called, progressive enhanced kind of way. And so it's just like, I don't know, I think this is such a cool concept, and to see it actually implemented on a website that's live, that's like a big website that's not Imgur, is really cool to me.
Yeah, so absolutely.
So the follow-up question is, how did you do it?
You're right.
Yeah, that's definitely a loaded question. There's a lot of moving pieces.
I know this is okay. A long time coming, because we first talked about it a while ago.
Yep. I had been working on it for quite a while. There was a lot of things that needed to get right. And of course, some things shipped a little less than perfect. And I had to polish those after it came out. And we also wanted to collect some data and, you know, make sure everything went smoothly. But really, the thing that I was waiting for was Apple needed to allow auto-playing videos on mobile devices in line, and they did that. They finally made that change. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I had maybe some tiny, you know, toss in the bucket, but I, and I'm sure other performance engineers, had spoken to Apple representatives and said, hey, you know, it's really painful. We have to give you actual GIFs because we can't use videos because you have a completely different kind of experience, you know, on if you're in Safari on an iPhone, you have to tap to get it to start playing at all. And then it goes into full screen. That was the older experience. And that's what they forced. And then with the release of, I'm going to say 10.12, Safari finally allowed you to do that, as long as either the video did not have an audio track or it was muted. And so they will allow you to autoplay that video in line, no problem. And I was like, that's it. This is the moment I've been waiting for. And I had been working on it kind of off and on for a while. And when that hit the press, I was like, all right, my time has come.
It was a big deal. I gave a talk, and it was about image performance, and something I talked about just like within it was GIFV. And I talked about how in the new iOS, like, you were allowed to finally have these auto playing images. And the next slide was like, no, this is really a big deal. Like, because it sounds so nerdy and small, but it went against this decision to not have that, which was because of performance reasons. And now you're saying that a better performant experience could be that we need to have these auto-playing videos.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. They're much, much smaller. I mean, I've seen, you know, pages that started out being like 80 megabytes and they were like 6 megabytes, you know, wow. After.
Still, I'm really curious.
Still downloading a dozen videos, but.
but it's not a dozen GIFs, and GIFs are just so massive.
Exactly.
Yeah. So did you have like a batch processing that went through all your GIFs and just converted them, or like how did that work out for you guys?
Yeah, so I actually I work on this real-time image processing software. It's open source. It's called Thumbor. Thumbor.
Thumbor.
Thumbor. And it was created by the folks at Globo.com. Which is in Brazil, and they have a very large website, and they use the software to do all of their image formatting and resizing and cropping, and there's really no limit to what it can do, especially if you get in there and get your hands dirty. But one of the things it can do is convert GIFs to videos. It can do it on the fly. And so what that means is in our content management system, I've hooked up our a bunch of helper, you know, ERB, basically, because we were a Rails shop, mostly. And so I hooked that up to just generate these video elements. And they have, you know, a URL. And the asset at the end of that URL actually doesn't exist yet, not until somebody requests it. And so
interesting. Okay.
What happens is Thumbor gets a request and then it downloads the source file and converts whatever you want on the fly. And so
wow,
it'll then
really
give you back that image. Yeah. Right.
Automate all the things.
I'm actually looking through it right now. I remember back in like 2011, I was trying to figure out the best way to responsive images, right? And so we were like, oh, you generate 15 sizes, and hopefully that's the best way. Sometimes you need to do some server-side stuff, and this looks like a much better solution for like all those problems.
Wait, can you do this with Image Magic also, or is this only something that Thumbboard does?
Well, okay, so, I mean, Image Magic, Thumbboard can actually use Image Magic under the hood, right?
Okay.
There's a lot of very nerdy libraries and options that you can use under the hood, but the main thing is that you have an image that comes in one way, and then it comes out a slightly different way based on the options that you send in the URL. And of course, the other option would be to do something like batch processing.
Right.
If you have a static website, if you have a some kind of job runner system, something like a Gulp or whatever the kids are using these days, and then you can set that up.
I was thinking of a joke, but there were just too many, so I gave up.
But you can do batch processing ahead of time, and I would say that that's simpler from a development perspective. If you can just do them at the time that you build the site, and then stuff them in an S3 bucket or wherever you're putting them, and that's great. If you need something that's large scale, then you're probably going to want to have some kind of real time on the fly processing system. And there are lots of URLs that I generate for images, and those images never see the light of day. They're never created because no device of that type hits that article. And the ones that do, they will generate that image, and it will be cached, and it all happens. And then it's behind our CDN, and got like four different caching layers. It's pretty complex.
Wow.
Yep.
I'm just like thumbing through the read the docs of this. I'm like, wow, this would have solved so many problems back when I was doing more CMS stuff.
This is why we do the show, so that we can learn about all the tools 3 days before everyone else does.
Well, that's, responsive images, responsive websites. Well, yeah. Responsive websites brought this new requirement for responsive images. And I know in the beginning, people just put like a 10 megabyte JPEG on their site that was like 4,000 pixels. And like, yeah,
it's good. When Retina came out, that was a big deal.
Exactly. And you didn't want to have like a low res image. So people had to make the choice, and they did the easiest thing, which made a little bit of sense at the time, but it was, let me just put the biggest image on there. It's going to look good on all devices. But if you want to do a little bit better, then you need to use something like SourceSat, or maybe some type of JavaScript based lazy loader.
Which is part of the picture element, or adding scripts to your page that allow you to.
I was only curious if you use picture or not, because I haven't seen anyone really use it. And so I was wondering if I just missed that wave and I would not paying attention, or
I haven't really seen a lot of it either in the wild, and people talk about it all the time. It's a good idea.
Well, just as a quick tangent, we do use the picture element on all of our Vox sites, so we've been using that for, I want to say, about a year.
I think it's really important, especially for media sites that are serving a lot of big content, to use it. So if anyone's going to use it, it should be media sites. It should be everyone, really. Honestly, it's a great element to have for responsive web design. Basically, it allows you to serve images based on parameters like device or screen size or PPI, DPI, like we kind of just talked about. And there used to have to be a polyfill for this, but now most browsers support it, so you could just sort of implement it and progressively enhance, because you can have the image element within the picture element and send like a normal source for browsers that don't support it. This is just me giving background for listeners that aren't aware.
No, absolutely. That's
part of my job.
I agree. And that's exactly how we do it. You don't have to polyfill very much. If you do want to support slightly older browsers, I assume everyone is using a really fancy, JavaScript loader, probably Webpack, right?
You guys did
show on Webpack not too long ago. Huh? So if you use Webpack and you just require those modules only when they're needed, use that code splitting, then you can polyfill without like a massive cost. So I occasionally refer to it as punishing the wicked, which I shouldn't, but...
You're still an IE8? Well, here you go. Sorry.
Is 1 megabyte also... of JavaScript. But really, what it is just rewarding, you know, the people who are using more modern technology. And I know, obviously, not everyone has a choice, but point is, only load those big polyfills whenever you absolutely need to.
Yeah, that's really good to do. No, really, though. Is Webpack also at the core of how you're implementing Giphy? Is that what's allowing you to do the querying on the sites?
No. Webpack is mostly helpful just for, compiling assets and handling some of the, you know, more difficult, tricky JavaScript stuff. But we don't, there's no reason you have to use Webpack to use Giphy. You can use plain old JavaScript, maybe a little bit of jQuery, a dumb JavaScript file, and you can be off and running. There's nothing hugely complicated about it.
Are you sending you the assets server side to the users, or like how are you doing the query?
What happens is I put a video element in the page, and that has a source attribute that's already set, and that is a Thumbor URL. So whenever the user first loads up the page, the video element has a couple of attributes on it, like autoplay, and it's going to try to play the video as soon as the page loads, right? And then what I do is I kind of start with a low resolution. My idea there was, if you're on a mobile device and it's sort of a bad connection, and especially if there's a lot of resource contention as the page is loading, you'll get that JavaScript-free loading of the GIF and a lower resolution right away. And so you start to see something. And then whenever we have JavaScript and some of the other things are loaded and we're ready, then I'll try to upgrade that resolution to match whatever it is that your device is. So it's almost like a progressive JPEG in a way, you know, where you have like a low res one and then a high res one.
Yeah, but so this is all in client side. Like you're sending the low res version, which is awesome to do.
Yeah.
And then you're querying for if the browser can handle the higher resolution version of the video, and then you're sending that.
Yeah, exactly. So we put everything in just dumb old HTML. You know, it's nice and cacheable. And of course, we run large websites, and so we have a lot of traffic, and it's really nice to be able to just cache HTML. And so most of that's cached, and as soon as that hits their browser, it's going to load up the low tech version, and then we're going to try to upgrade the resolution as soon as JavaScript is ready, and we also do some client side validation to make sure that the video is actually playing, and that is a big part of the implementation as well. If you don't want to do user agent sniffing and say like, oh, okay, I have X, Y, and Z devices and browsers that support this autoplay. If you don't want to do something like that, which by the way, is really like a terrible special sort of hell, doing that sort of thing. So I've had enough of that in my life and never going back. And so I rather focus on, querying, elements or JavaScript, something on the page to try to figure out if it can play. I'm not going to ask the browser. I don't care what browser it is. I'm just going to ask it if it can play a video. And one of the other things that was really cool, and this is another new feature that just dropped very quietly, is that the HTML5 video API now returns a promise when you do video element.play. So it's just a function, just called play. Before, it would return null, I believe. And now it returns a promise. And what's really helpful about that is I can actually confirm whether the video has succeeded in playing or not. And I can also say if it doesn't return a promise at all, then I have no insight into whether this video is going to be playing or not. And because I want to have like a consistent experience, I'm just going to assume that that browser can't play the video. And that's whenever I switch, that's when I switch the fallbacks. And so what we do there is I actually take a picture element, I wrap it in a script tag. The script tag is of type template. So just in the type attribute, I just write template in there, and the browser won't try to execute that like a piece of JavaScript. It just kind of ignores it because it doesn't understand it. And then if I determine that the video isn't playing or can't be played, then I just go inside that script element, pull that HTML out, and then replace that element with that HTML. So it's not really client-side rendering. It's about the simplest possible thing you can have. And then that replaces the video element with the picture element, and that uses regular old GIFs.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
Like this whole system. I think you did a really good job articulating exactly how you did it and why and what. So if you go on Vox, is it on all the Vox sites? Is it implemented currently?
Yep, all the Vox sites.
If you go to any of the Vox sites, either Curbed, VoxMedia.com, or it's just Vox.com, you will not actually see GIFs when you think you're seeing GIFs. And they're saving you and your browser a lot of memory and heartache and fan running to show.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Jason, so much for being on our show. We are definitely at time, but I learned a ton. Chris, I'm sure you did too.
Thumbmore. I've never heard of this before, so I'm pretty excited.
Thumbmore is cool. GIF V is really awesome. Awesome explanation of how you did all these things. Thank you for joining us. Jason, how can people find you on the internet?
Best place is at Twitter, and I'm Okor, O-K-O-R.
O-K-O-R.
Yep.
Sweet. So thank you all for listening to the show this week. We just started a Patreon page, so if you want to support the show, we would super appreciate that. We're basically just trying to get better mics and pay for hosting at this point, honestly. So if you want to support the show, if you listen to it, if you learn something, it's just patreon.com/toolsday, patreon.com/toolsday, T-O-O-L-S-D-A-Y, but you knew that already. Also, Toolsday on Twitter's. I'm not going to spell it again. You know how to spell Toolsday. We're going to share all of these links in our show notes. Thank you again, Jason, for being on the show. Any last words for our audience?
Be fast.
All right. Be fast.
Be furious.
And go forth making the web a better place. This got really corny really fast.
I'm not a writer.
Anyway, bye, y'all. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me. Bye.